This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards.
Hi, my name's Ange Barry, and I'm the CEO of Joy 94.9, Australia's only LGBTIQ community radio station. I'm new to Joy, but Joy's been around for 26 years. We want to be around for another 26 years, and to do that, we need to grow. My vision for the future is for Joy to become Joy Nation, a combination of video, news and editorial, and of course, the great radio station that you love. We are so grateful for the support that our community has provided us over the years, but we are now reaching out to you, our friends in the broader Australian community, to help make this happen. So I'm asking you now to choose Joy by going to joy.org.au and donating to our Chuff campaign, helping us raise $250,000 to build Joy Nation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
Welcome to Saturday Magazine. And if you can hear some background noise, it is some dancers and drums going on in Swanston Street outside the front of the Melbourne Town Hall. Saturday Magazine starts now.
From Joy 94.9, this is Saturday Magazine with David Macca McCarthy.
From the Melbourne Town Hall, on the portico of the Melbourne Town Hall, we're about to be joined by Michael O'Brien, and if you hear something in the background, it's—I'm not sure what group it is, Tas, but they're Sally. I think Sally Cab's organised a bit of a disruption for us.
Is that what it is, Macca?
Is that?
Well, it's a bunch of drummers and a bunch of dancers, actually.
Yes, but that's fine. Today, we are coming to you live from the Melbourne Town Hall, courtesy of the City of Melbourne and St. Ali, and it's great to be here. And look, our first guest will join us in a moment, and that is Michael O'Brien. Michael is the state member for Malvern. He's the leader of the opposition, leader of the Liberal Party. He was elected to Parliament in 2006, formerly a lawyer and barrister and advisor to Peter Costello, and he was, when Peter was the former Howard government treasurer. So we're very, very happy to be here today, and we're actually going to, in a second, Michael's going to put the headphones on, and we'll... It's my pleasure to welcome Michael O'Brien. Good morning, Michael.
Morning, Macca. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Now, the last time you joined us on the show, it was actually the 26th of July 2010, and that was...
On this show, that is, Michael.
On this show. Yes. And that was actually organised by Leonie Burke. But you're now the leader of the opposition, following the state election last year. And I think what our listeners are interested in initially... What does Michael O'Brien stand for? What do you believe in?
Look, that's a really good question. I suppose when I became leader, so people wanted to know who I was and what I stood for and, you know, why I got involved in politics. And I suppose it first started when I was in year 12. I sort of just read the papers, and I'll show you my age here, Macca and Tas, because I'd recently had my school 30th reunion. So I did year 12 back in 1989, back in the midst of time.
Michael, you're a lot younger than us, so it's okay.
But I don't look it, that's the issue. And look, that was a time, it was a really interesting time in world politics. You saw the Berlin Wall was coming down. Really we're getting to that end of that Cold War thing. And also in Australia, we're seeing that Victoria wasn't going so well. You might remember the Kayne-Kerner governments. We had some really tough economic times. And I read the papers because I was studying English and politics, and it just sort of made me realise that a good government can do really good things. It can make people's lives better, but a bad government can really get in the way and make people's lives worse. And I knew people who lost businesses. I knew people who lost homes and those high interest rates. And it sort of made me want to get involved, and rather just complaining about things, to actually do something. And I've always been one to believe in the individual. I've always been one to believe in that, you know, people should have as much freedom as possible. And government's got an important role to play, but government shouldn't be too intrusive in people's lives. So that's always sort of been the values that have really, I suppose, fired me up, got me involved. So, and look, I've taken that. I didn't intend to go into politics. I studied law and commerce. I was practicing as a lawyer. And then I had a chance to work as a lawyer with Peter Costello when he was Federal Treasurer. And that really opened my eyes to the fact that a government that's got a clear idea of what they want to achieve, that they want to grow the economy, they want to actually make things better for people, can actually make a difference. So that's what inspired me to stand for Parliament as opposed to just sitting on the sidelines and having my say.
If we were to put a frame around, you know, your work and your values, what would be inside that frame? So, you know, if people were to say to you, Michael, explain to me, you know, you've told us about how you came into politics, but the values that are really, really important to you, what are they?
I think fundamental individual freedoms are Yep. really important. So freedom of speech, freedom of association, the right to live your own life, the right to be happy, the right to work hard and be rewarded for that, equality of opportunity. These are the things that I think are really important because, you know, governments can't get everything right all the time, and we know they don't. So my view is if it's a choice between government running my life or me running my life, I think that the individual should have as much control as possible over their own lives because I think that that is how people progress, that is how people, their own individuality is respected, and that is how we progress as a society. This idea that government knows better than any of the rest of us, I don't subscribe to that. And that's why I've always tried to take my political position as being one that increases freedom and increases people's choice over their own lives and control over their own lives.
Cool. Now, Michael, you are at an LGBTI radio station, so it won't come to any surprise to you if we ask you questions that are pertinent to our community.
Of course.
You know, I'm doing a little bit of research to find out where things are at with the Liberal Party and yourself, and what we discovered was a review that was conducted by Tony Nutt not long after the election. And one of the interesting things in that review was that it recommended that you actually have a much broader offering to represent more broadly the people of Victoria. And we're all diverse, you know, we're all very different. And we're very interested in what that means to you and how that's reflected in some of your behaviours as the leader of the opposition.
Sure. Well, I think one thing that I've already done is put much more of an emphasis on broad policy. Now, I know we had a lot of policies at the last state election because I was the shadow treasurer then and I had to cost them to make sure they all added up, which they did, I'm happy to say. But I don't think many Victorians knew enough about what we stood for. They thought, OK, we're going to be strong on crime. But beyond that, I think a lot of Victorians didn't really know what the Libs were about. So the first big policy announcement that I've made as Liberal leader, and I've done it 3 years out from the election, is in the environment. I've said we are going to have a policy of zero household waste to landfill. We're going to upgrade recycling, and we're going to introduce... and the birds are very noisy here, aren't they?
They certainly are. Not sure what's causing that.
I'll take that as being applause rather than condemnation. But we've said zero household waste to landfill, upgrading recycling and introducing waste to energy plants. We want to take an environmental problem, which is the amount of household waste we have rotting in landfill, creating greenhouse gas emissions. We want to turn that into a form of low emissions energy to actually take the pressure off power bills. I think smart policy can give you an environmental benefit and an energy benefit.
Now, that's great.
And that's exactly the sort of... So this is a space where I don't think the Liberal Party has been regarded as having a lot to say in the past. I'm trying to change that as leader.
That's great. That's great. Now, talk to us about the LGBTI community.
Sure.
Our analysis shows that you have voted twice, not once, but twice, against the same bill, which was designed to actually allow trans people to change their birth certificates. Mm. Our analysis has also showed that you have supported a tax to the Royal Children's Hospital gender service by various questions that have been allowed to come through in question time in Parliament. How do you reconcile that, especially in the context of the Nutt Review, which says you really need to have a much broader offering to the community?
Sure. Well, look, I'd also say if you really looked into my voting record, you'd see that I would have also voted for a number of measures very much pro-GLBTI community, pro-removing discrimination in relation to superannuation. There have been a number of areas where I've stood up and spoken publicly in favour of measures to reduce and eliminate discrimination.
So what do you say to the trans people out there who are listening this morning?
Sure.
And what do you say to their mums and dads?
What I'd say is that, and I said this at the time as leader, I said, a birth certificate actually describes your sex at birth, not gender. It describes sex. If you look at the box on the birth certificate, it says sex. So what the government did in this bill is they confused sex and gender, which are two different issues.
So what's the difference between sex and gender, Michael?
Well, I think most people would regard sex as being biological sex.
Mm-hmm.
Gender is people's self-perception of what they are. Now, I have, as a Liberal, I have no problem with people identifying as they see fit. I have no problem with people identifying in a way which reflects who they are and which makes them happy. But my concern with this bill was that it tried to turn something which records biological sex into something different without actually being upfront about that.
So here you are believing in freedom of speech and individual choice and the right to determine your own destiny, and we have some members of our community, only a small number of members of our community, who need to change their birth certificate documentation to reflect the person that they are.
And one of the questions I pose is, why couldn't the government look at having a document that reflects gender? Why are we conflating sex and gender? And if you've got an answer for me on that, I'd love to hear it, Taz.
I don't, but what I do know is that this is very important to members of our trans community, yes. Very important to their families. It's not just happening here in Victoria, little old Victoria, it's all over the world. That this is a trend where trans people are saying we want to change our birth certificates to reflect the person that we are, and you have voted twice against that.
Well, I've explained why, because I don't think that biological sex and gender are the same thing, and I'm very happy with people reflecting who they are and describing who they are. I think that's right and that's correct. And if the government had actually said we're going to change the name of this and record gender rather than sex, Michael, it may have been very different. But I don't think we can pretend that biological sex and gender are the same things.
I've got a suggestion. How about the birth certificate? If you're troubled by the difference between sex and gender, I'm not, but the birth certificate can say sex / gender.
Well, look, I mean, I think that that's something that the government should have considered at the time. It pushed the laws through.
Mm-hmm.
We understand that. But, at my concern, you asked me why I didn't support it, and I'm being very honest with you, saying that I just don't think that sex and gender are exactly the same thing, and it's to conflate the two on the birth certificate was just not really honest. But I think, why can't we find a common ground where we can find methods where transgender people can have identity documentation that reflects who they are? I am on board with that. I have no problem with that at all.
Okay.
So I think we're perhaps getting a little bit focused on voting on a particular piece of legislation. I've explained why I didn't support that legislation for that reason. But surely to goodness, we can all agree that transgender people should be able to have ID documents that reflects who they are.
Let's move on.
Yeah.
Michael, the next question I wanted to ask you about was the sorts of things that you have supported. Now, you have supported some fairly conservative candidates in fairly senior leadership positions. Some of the candidates that you've supported in leadership positions within the Liberal Party, for example, have been active supporters of conversion therapy and ardent opponents of marriage equality. Again, taking into account Tony Nutt's review, how do you reconcile that?
Well, Tass, first of all, I think you're talking about nothing in the parliamentary party, nothing amongst MPs. You're talking about one person in one party organisational role who was already there, and as a Victorian leader, I supported Victorian candidates. And that person has publicly denied, that she supports gay conversion therapy. So I think we should just put that on the record in fairness to her. I don't support gay conversion therapy. I've said it's quackery. And we are looking forward to the government bringing forward legislation that will deal with it. Now, it's very important we understand.
So our community can expect you to support... opposition to a conversion therapy?
Yes, we have said, and David Davis, who's my Shadow Minister for Equality, has said in the Parliament that, you know, that our principle is we will support action being taken against it. What we need to be sure about is that the government is not, again, trying to wrap a whole lot of other things and calling it conversion therapy. If you want to have a word to a counsellor or a minister or a psychologist or a psychiatrist, if you're confused, if you're looking for support, that is not conversion therapy. To my mind, conversion therapy is trying to force people to change their sexuality. And that is not only impractical because it doesn't work, but it's wrong because there's nothing wrong with anyone's sexuality. So our view is we don't support gay conversion therapy. We just call on the government to please make sure they're very careful about how they define it so that it's the genuine, the forced, the negative activity rather than trying to embrace it and have something else that, you know, yeah, people
see.
That's
music to our community's ears. Great. That you will support the opposition to conversion therapy. Macca.
Now, Michael, I know that it is predominantly a federal issue, but, you know, you have discussions with your federal colleagues. They've released version 2 of the Religious Discrimination Bill. Equality Australia believes that this version presents an even tougher attack on the rights of LGBTI Victorians. So what is your message to the community about this discriminatory legislation? We've heard what you've said about free speech and the ability, you know, for people to manage their lives and for government not to be involved in their lives. But I think it's fair to say that our community, across all political persuasions, is very concerned about this legislation. Because, if I can put it this way, we feel that we're in the crosshairs on this. That a person's right to their religious belief and to talk about that and for that to be protected, I accept that. But also, you know, a religious belief is something that you choose. Sexuality or gender is not something that you choose. So how do you feel, you know, as an ex-lawyer and, you know, some understanding of the bill? What is your position on this bill as you've seen it so far?
Well, look, you probably have the advantage of me, Macca, because I haven't actually read the bill because it is a federal bill.
Yeah.
And as state leader, I focus on state legislation. I think it's very important we do get a right balance. We do need to protect people's rights of free speech. And, you know, remember, people in the gay and lesbian community for many years were shut out of the public square.
Yes.
Yeah. We can't forget that. We need to make sure that free speech ultimately protects everyone. Now, it's not just those who happen to be in power at the time. And in fact, it's often the most powerless who are empowered by free speech because it lets their voice be heard when those powerful forces would like it to be shut down. So I support free speech as a principle. We obviously need to get the balance right. We can't have anything that incites hatred, incites crimes or attacks that is against the law and should always be against the law, should be punished severely. So what I'll be interested in to see in this federal bill, which I haven't seen yet, is does it get the balance right? Now, I think there have been some instances where people who are concerned about religious freedom have rightly been able to point to things such as the Tasmanian case where there was, I think, the priest who was had complaints against him to the Equal Opportunity Commission down there because he said, well, this is my church's teaching on marriage equality. Hmm. And, you know, I think that sort of thing really drags the whole issue into disrepute. So it's a real shame that some people have gone over the top in trying to make legal issues out of people saying, this is who I am and it's what I believe. So I think we need to make sure that sort of thing shouldn't be happening.
So where you have extremes, Michael, and you're talking there, you know, in your view that was an extreme response from someone in Tasmania. Equally on the other side, you know, we see extreme responses from people of faith and particularly from organisations of faith that, you know, I think all Victorians, and particularly LGBTI Victorians, they want a balance in this.
I agree.
And, you know,
actually, Macca, I think LGBTI Victorians and Australians actually want respect.
They want
to be accepted for who they are.
Yeah, and I always come back to this, and, you know, Michael, if I may say, you're a person of faith. You have, you know, some religious faith in your past and in your life. I am God's work. Right?
I agree.
This legislation is not.
Well, you have the benefit of me, yep. Macken, because I haven't seen it, and I it's unusual for a politician. I try not to comment on things I don't know anything about.
Mm-hmm.
I know most politicians.
So that's encouraging, actually.
make a note of that one. We like that one.
I know most politicians are happy to run off at the mouth, but look, I just think it is important to get the balance right. People do have the right to be safe. They have the right to be treated with respect. Others have the right to express their own beliefs. Where there's a contest between those two positive things, we need to make sure that the law gets the balance right. And I hope the federal government does that, but I haven't seen the legislation yet.
Well, I'd certainly encourage you to have a read of the draft, and we'd love to. And, you know, and I spoke to you yesterday and said, you know, yourself or your shadow cabinet have the opportunity once a month to come on this show,
sure,
and talk to our community. You know, often political parties talk about, you know, and your predecessor Matthew Guy also said the same, you know, we want to engage with the LGBTI community. Yeah. The offer is there to come on once a month and talk about the issues that are important to us, but also to the issues that are important to you, you know, as the leader and you know, as the leader of your party. You know, it is important, but I think let's go past the discrimination bill, encourage you to have a read of it.
Sure.
And then next time you're on, we can, you know, perhaps go through it a bit more.
Sounds like great summer reading. I'm sitting by the pool that I don't have. I can pick up a copy of the federal draft legislation and read through that over Christmas.
it's a good... I'm starting to read it and I'm not liking it. We've got nearly a minute. Did you want to foreshadow the next question, Tass, before we go to a break?
We should talk about gender equality next, sure, and what's happening in the Liberal Party. So this has been an area that's been debated a fair bit. So perhaps we might move into that space, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
I mean, we've got a huge long list of topics that we'd like to cover with you. We may run out of time, of course, but before we take a short break, Macca?
Exactly, and... you know, one of the reasons we're covering these issues with Michael is Michael hasn't been on Joy for 9 years, and he's now opposition leader.
Did I offend you last time I was on?
No, not at all.
Why has it taken so long to get me back on?
You know, perhaps it has taken a little while to get you this time, but...
I think you needed to be leader, you see.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Right. It wasn't worth worrying about before. Okay.
No, well, Leonie Burke... initiated that initial contact.
And Andrea Coote as well, I think.
That's right, and yeah. Andrea Coote, and both fantastic representatives, you know, of diversity and equality in your party. Absolutely. Unfortunately, no longer members of Parliament, but, you know, they did some really, really great work over the years.
Macca, we've also had a question from the Mayor of Stonington, Steve Stephanopoulos, but I'll come back to that in a second. I did foreshadow that we're going to ask you a question about gender equality, and there has been a fair bit of criticism of the Liberal Party and, you know, the way in which it's actually not only treated women, but in terms of getting the balance in Parliament as well. The state government now has a 50-50 target right across the board. It's achieved that in terms of its ministry, its members of Parliament, you know, government boards, etc., etc. Now, you've actually got a very well-respected and a moderate Liberal woman who's retiring, Mary Waldridge. Can you guarantee to our listeners this morning that she'll be replaced and you'll be supporting her replacement with another moderate woman?
Well, Tass, look, the way the Liberal Party works is that the leader will get one vote at a pre-selection convention out of hundreds of people. I can tell you that with my 30 years experience in the Liberal Party, the last thing that a leader should do is try and dictate to the members who they choose as a replacement. So I won't be doing that because it's disrespectful to them and frankly it's counterproductive. Look, Mary has been a great friend of mine, a great colleague of mine.
And a great minister and a great member of Parliament.
Absolutely right. And she will have very big shoes to fill, and I will rely on my branch members in that eastern metropolitan area to choose somebody who'll be appropriate to fill Mary's shoes.
So what's your attitude to appointing women into Parliament?
Sure. Well, look, I mean, from my point of view as leader, we've got a 50-50 leadership team in the Victorian Liberal Party, which Daniel Andrews does not have. Right, I've got my deputy is Cindy McLeish. In the upper house, David Davis and Georgie Crozier. We've got 50-50 men and women. The National Party has got 50-50 men and women in their leadership team. So if you look at the leadership team, we've actually got 50-50 gender equality in Victoria. The Labor Party doesn't have that. If you look at my shadow cabinet, when I became leader, I get to appoint my own shadow cabinet. I put five new people into it. Four of them were women. Not on the basis of quotas, but because these were talented, hard-working women who deserve promotion. So my view as leader is I want to make the Liberal Party a more attractive place for women to stand for election for.
What percentage of women MPs... what percentage of Liberal MPs are women?
Too few. And what we know, and remember, we lost a lot of seats at the last election, and sadly, many of the seats we lost some very, very good women MPs.
Well, let me take you to Steve Stephanopoulos' question. This is related to gender, of course. He's asking why you have stayed silent on supporting girls and women's sporting facility in your own electorate in Malvern, which the local and federal governments are funding and thousands of your constituents are supporting.
Well, I've always had a very good relationship with Steve, so I'm a bit disappointed that he's put that nasty little question to me. So when I come back, because I'm sure Steve's listening, and good morning, Steve, and as Steve well knows, the council mishandled that whole matter. They threatened to kick out the female bowlers from Chadstone Bowls Club, and they were pitting bowlers against netballers. And I thought that was very, very badly handled. Local residents in the area certainly don't appreciate the way it's been done. They're very concerned about the increased traffic. So I support more sporting facilities in my electorate. I support more facilities for women and girls. And as a father of a daughter who plays netball, I have a better understanding of it than even the mayor might have. So Steve can... call in with a pot shot, and that's fine. But I'd say that if for those people who remembered the viral clip of the Chadstone lady bowlers, the reason that all happened is because council tried to pit one sporting group of women against another sporting group of women, and I don't think that was the way to go.
Consider yourself slapped, Steve. This is what happens when you listen in. You're lucky we read it out. Really quickly, we've got some other questions, but I actually mentioned this to you yesterday. The UK election result is quite interesting.
Mm.
It's it is about Brexit, but it's also about, when you look at the policy prescriptions from Labor, which were very, very extensive, versus perhaps less so from the Conservatives. You've seen a very strong vote for Boris Johnson, and a rejection of Jeremy Corbyn,
yes,
which I have to say I'm not uncomfortable with. Right. What do you draw from that? But, Brexit in terms of Australian politics, but particularly, Victoria has always had a very strong relationship with the UK. How do you see this playing out in terms of our relationship with the UK?
I think it actually provides opportunities for us here in Victoria and in Australia. Once the UK leaves the European Union, they're going to be much more free to enter into trade agreements. And I would have thought one of the first places they'd be looking to do a trade deal on would be here. But also, this opens up opportunities in terms of immigration as well. In fact, one of the really interesting points of Boris Johnson's campaign was he kept talking about the need to bring in to the UK what he called an Australian-style points immigration system. And they kept using that phrase, Australian-style points-based immigration system. I think that there's, for people in Victoria who want to go and travel and work and live in the UK, I think that this will actually open up some great opportunities for us to have much freer movement of people between Australia and the UK. So whether it's for travel or work or permanent immigration, I think it's a great opportunity.
It is. Look, thanks for that. David Davis recently, you probably listened to the podcast, your leader of the opposition in the upper house. We asked him about the medically supervised injecting facility and, we spoke about it at some length, but he said that the opposition, the problem that the opposition or that he now has with the facility is where it's located.
Yep.
Not the fact that it exists,
yep,
but where it's located. Now, that in itself, that's a change from opposition to the facility to now it's about...
supporting the facility.
Saying it's actually where it's located. Can you flesh that out a little bit for us?
Sure. So, look, when I became leader, I said that... because we'd previously taken the position where we'd close it down.
Yeah.
The election happened, Labor won. No doubting that. So there is a legislative trial. Our view is that trial will now continue. That trial will go on to the time at which it's been legislated for. There's no point pretending otherwise. The question is, while this trial is going on, where is it located? Mm-hmm. And we are very strongly of the view, having spoken to the local residents, local small business people, that this is, it's in the wrong place. It shouldn't be so close to a school, to homes, to small businesses and shops. We think it should be relocated to a place that is still accessible, but is not in such a sensitive community area.
Where do you think it should be?
Yeah.
Well, we think that you could find, ideally, an industrial area. So you're not surrounded by residences, and you're not surrounded by schools. An industrial area has got good public transport links. People have got to be able to go there, otherwise the trial won't work.
So can you tell us where that is,
I'm not going to give you a Melways reference, Daz. I don't have the resources of government to be able to
GPS.
Determine
GPS, nobody that. Uses a Melways well, anymore.
Sorry, I'll know. I told you I was old, didn't I? I think that there are opportunities there. The trouble is the government just seems so pig-headed about this.
Well, I think the issue, Michael, is that people won't go to an industrial site in the middle of nowhere. I actually happened to visit the injecting facility myself last Thursday, and I was completely overwhelmed by what I saw, to be frank. I'd learned from the medical director that 450 people use it a day. 450 people. There are people who use in a car park on the other side of Victoria Parade that will actually not cross Victoria Parade to come to the supervised injecting facility. So this idea that you can actually locate it in an industrial site at the end of nowhere is just not going to work.
Well, look, I'd respectfully disagree, and look, that's the sort of thing that people of good conscience can have a debate over. I believe that you can have an industrial site, and when I talk about the end of nowhere, there are industrial sites in Richmond, just places not 37 metres from a primary school. Just places not so close to homes and shops.
And I understand the primary school actually are very thankful that this facility exists, because they commence the day having to collect bucketfuls of syringes around the perimeter of the school. They no longer do that.
Well, if you speak to the parents of the children there, they will tell you a different story, Tess. They will tell you that they are concerned about taking their kids to school because of some of the antisocial behaviour that their children witness that takes place very close to the injecting centre. The drug dealing, the people passed out on the footpath and in their cars, the public sexual acts. These are things that, frankly, you wouldn't want to live next to. I wouldn't. Daniel Andrews doesn't want to.
He lives in St Kilda. He does.
But I'm sure that that's not the reason you live in St Kilda. I don't think Daniel Andrews would want to live next to this, and I don't understand why he's forcing other people to do it as well. I think we can do better than where it's located now.
Well, I'd like to know where that better is, because I'm not sure that there is a better.
I'm hearing what you're saying, Michael, and whilst I don't agree with all of it, in terms of location, if you put it, let's just say something, and I won't say the suburb, but let's just say, something inner west or inner north, a semi-industrial area. Number one, public transport access would be really important, so, people can get there. I understand that, you don't want to say, MAP 45 E4 or something like that, but we need to get an idea.
But it's what the legislation does, Macca. Yeah, it actually nominates the address.
Yeah, but as to where you would put it. Now, I know that, Sally Capp, the Lord Mayor, has said that the City of Melbourne would be interested in running a trial. Mm. The City of Melbourne has the highest call-out rate for an ambulance as attending drug overdoses. Now, the City of Melbourne is big, but I think people would be interested in terms of the type of area that you're thinking. Just industrial, I think it needs to be, we'd like it to be a bit more.
Well, look, I appreciate that, Macca, but look, I say I don't have the resources of government. I don't have the access to where all the Crown land is. I don't have access
You put it up in Parliament.
Well, look, as has recently been indicated, there have been a few people in Parliament who've had substance abuse issues from time to time, which is very unfortunate.
Also not a surprise. They're human beings.
Well, absolutely, absolutely. And, but the question is it in the right place at the moment? And I think when you listen to the residents, when you see what's happening there, we had hundreds of people marching the other day because these are people who are concerned their lives have been turned upside down. Who's speaking for them, Tass? I'm not hearing anybody, apart from the opposition, apart from the Liberal Party, speak up for these people whose lives have been turned upside down by Daniel Andrews imposing this centre on their community.
Now, we're nearly out of time, Macca, but I needed to ask this question.
Sure, go.
We've heard lots of rumours from a number of your colleagues and even in the media about leadership issues within the Liberal Party. Now, we actually don't believe them, but we wanted to hear from yourself what your reflections on this might be, and how do you explain all this talk about your leadership aspirations?
Look, my leadership aspirations are to be the leader, and I am. And look, I think this will be the second last job I have in politics. I certainly hope so.
Second last? Oh, yeah. Okay. Your next one should be as premier.
That's the plan. That's the plan. Look, I was elected unanimously by my
party.
That's
a great line, by the way.
Thank you. I was elected unanimously by my party after the election. And remember, it was a really bad result for the Liberal Party. We went backwards. So they turned to me unanimously to help pick up the pieces and get us back on the road. And that's what we've done. We've been disciplined, we've been focused on holding Labor to account, but we're also working on building a better alternative. I've been doing public meetings throughout the state, and the one thing that keeps coming through is that people, you know, they get a bit sick of the negativity and they want to hear some positive alternatives. That's what I'm working on. That's why our waste to energy policy, our zero waste to landfill policy, this is all about not only pointing out where Labor's getting things wrong, but being better than them, giving people a real choice at the next election. So that's what excites me. It's exciting my colleagues, and I have to say I'm very, very confident that me and my team will work our backsides off to present a better alternative to Mr. Andrews the next election.
Now, really quickly, and I've actually got something for you, some recycling Saturday magazine stuff.
Thank you. Do I have to declare that on the Register of Interest?
No, it's under the value.
Okay.
The Mental Health Royal Commission, you know, really quickly, you've supported pretty much all the recommendations other than how this could be paid for.
Mm.
We're talking a big sum of money here.
Sure.
We're probably talking $1 billion a year.
Potentially.
How would you pay for that?
This government wastes so much money. So much money. I mean, you look at level crossings, $3 billion blown out on there. You look at the Melbourne Metro Tunnel, $5 billion. You look at North East Link, where they haven't even turned a sod yet. It's already gone from being a $6.5 million project to a $6.5 billion project to $16 billion. Just simply managing these projects better would free up billions of dollars that could be spent elsewhere. That's number one. Number two, you've got a premier.
But that's not a savings. That's actually.
It is.
That's
otherwise money that has to come from other parts of the budget.
That's money that's not been estimated at projects that haven't been estimated at accurately.
But you have to pay for them.
Of course.
So if you're paying extra money on these projects, that's less money you've got for mental health. You've got a Premier who's got a bigger personal staff than the Prime Minister of the country. You've got government agencies being set up with corporate spin doctors in every single office.
I want some of that work.
Well, so I think that when you look at the size of this budget, if Daniel Andrews says, I'm not prepared to prioritise mental health over all the other things I waste money on, then that tells you about his priorities. I'm saying if I was Premier, I would prioritise mental health. I think it's more important than some of the things that politicians spend money on themselves.
So what would you cut?
Well, I've already flagged. It's about cutting waste. It's about cutting waste. It's about cutting blowouts.
So you'll cut the Premier's office? Cut some NGOs?
It is about making sure. Don't put words in my mouth.
I'm asking you.
Well, I'm telling you, we will cut the waste on the major projects. We will cut the waste in the Premier's personal staff, absolutely. We will make sure that the public service is focused on delivering services, and the spin doctoring stuff, frankly, if we as politicians can't be known by decisions we're making in our own works, then we're not very good at it. I don't understand why the Premier has to have more media advisers than there are members of the press gallery. But he does. So I think there's plenty of places. If you're serious about prioritising mental health, why put a new tax on it? And can I just finish on this note? A mental health organisation came out this week and said, we don't support a tax. They said mental health shouldn't be stigmatised by having its own special levy. It is a fundamental job of government to fund mental health, and it should be funded out of general revenue, not out of a special levy or tax. So when you've got the mental health sector themselves coming out saying they think Daniel Andrews is wrong on this, I'm very happy to stand with them.
We have to go, Michael. I want to thank you, and again, I reiterate the invitation. Once a month, yourself or a member of the Shadow Cabinet is very welcome to come on this show and talk to us about the issues that are important to our community, but also important to, you know, your party.
Thanks, mate.
And your pitch to be the next Premier of Victoria.
Appreciate that.
I know your Saturdays are valuable. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much for making the time to come in. When we go off air, I'm going to give you a little gift, and it is below the limit. So you don't have to. Actually, you can declare it, but you don't have to.
I've loved the chat. Thanks very
much. Thanks a lot, Michael. It's great.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.